You cannot come home if you haven't left. Friends, it's Morgan. Welcome back to another episode of Become Good Soil podcast. I am diving into, spoiler alert, my favorite topic of masculine initiation. What does a boy need to become a wholehearted man? What does a boy need to be able to flourish in the world intended for his stewardship? What does a boy need to become the kind of man that by his actions and his presence and his personality, that something of the aroma of Christ is manifest beyond words? Over time, people can say, he was the face of God to me. We did part one where we talked about the boy. If you haven't listened to that, please go back to part one. But the idea that the boy needs a mother. She is irreplaceable. And that seat of feminine love, that place of secure attachment, is the deepest longing, the deepest necessity of every human being as a man or as a woman. And from that foundation alone, the boy needs a father. He needs an invitation to a quest. He needs to be invited up into a father's kingdom to say, you are welcome in this place. All I have is yours. What's mine is yours. Who I am is available to you without question. There's nothing you can do or not do or not say that will cause me to withdraw my delight. I am inviting you into becoming a young man. I will celebrate the boy. I will delight in the boy. I will provide for opportunities that allow me to participate in God's initiation of your precious masculine soul. And from that place, I think if I had a name, a title for this sort of sub-episode of this series, it would simply be this: and then the boy needs to go. The boy must go. The boy must be released. The boy must launch. The boy must separate. And the boy must be blessed to do so. What does that look like? Where does it go wrong? How can we repair? And how can we become the kind of father that can bless the boy to go in order that one day he can return? He can return only from going. And in his returning, he can experience an utter transformation of the relationship of the father and son, and something that looks more like a brotherhood, looks more like reciprocity of siblings in the kingdom, that looks more like the Father manifesting the Trinity, where he says, how can I bless you? How can I love you? How can I, this is very important, come under you and serve as you partner with your God in stewarding, son, what has been entrusted to your care. And so, friends, with that big idea in mind, you could tell I'm excited. Oh my gosh, it's a spoiler, but I love this. And more importantly, I long for this. I long to recover this in my story. And I long to heal as a man in places I've not yet healed and repair the damage that I've done to my son and to my daughter and to younger ones entrusted to my care through omission and commission from the places in me that still lack maturity and lack initiation. And so I'm with you in it. I'm excited to explore these ideas. And I want to start with that by way of prologue. I want to return to green lights and the story of Matthew McConaughey. I've referred to this book multiple times in multiple podcasts and teachings, all sorts of places, and Become Good Soil. I've done a study with men on it. And I think why I love it is there's something authentic about Matthew. There's something raw. There's something that is not averse to risk. And when he sat down at 50 and looked at his life decade by decade, he noticed the themes, the theme of a self-important man that would bump his head, a self-important, uninitiated boy that would bump his head. He continued to take risks, and in taking risks, he continued to keep a posture of curiosity, some posture of being a student of his own heart, a student of God and his kingdom in some way, even though he may not name it as such. And I love the stories in any book that finds me laughing out loud. I know there's a treasure that I don't want to miss. And so with that in mind, I want to pick up with a story of Matthew in high school. And I think it'd be fun just to read a couple short sections from Matthew McConaughey's Green Lights. It's spring of 1988, my senior year in high school, Matthew says. I was rolling. I had straight A's, a job that kept $45 in my back pocket all the time, a 4 handicap in golf. I'd won most handsome in my class, dating the best looking girl at my school and at the school across town. Yep, I was catching green lights. So we find Matthew McConaughey. He's killing it. He is at the top of his class in every report card that actually matters to a young man. He was 18, and on his 18th birthday, his parents said to him, "If you haven't learned it yet, Matthew, you're not going to." In my family, the 18th birthday was a seminal moment. It meant no more rules. It meant no more curfew. It meant independence. It meant freedom. I graduated from high school, and like most kids, I wasn't sure what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. I mean, I thought I wanted to go to law school, become a defense attorney, but I wasn't absolutely certain. My mom came up with a radical idea. "Hey, you love travel, Matthew. What if you became an exchange student?" And so, friends, here's the moment Matthew feels like he knows exactly who he is. He has figured out a way to thrive, to catch green lights, even through a really messy situation with his parents who were divorced multiple times, remarried multiple times, with tons of abuse in his home, complicated relationships with brothers. He thought he was killing it. And there was something that needed to shift. He needed something that wasn't accessible in the kingdom in which he built, in the kingdom in which he grew up. He needed to leave. He needed to go to Sydney. He became an exchange student. He dreamed. He went through the Rotary Club, and he finds what he thought was the dream come true. He had images of hot chicks and sand and surfing and life in Sydney and chilling on the beach, meeting new people, and continuing to kill it. What he didn't know was he was set up for a divine disruption. What he didn't know was what he actually needed was unraveling, was unlearning, was stripping down, was going without, was being sort of cleansed of all the crutches and the things, the architecture that he had made to prop up the identity of who he thought he truly was. And so the story goes on in this chapter where he gets a job. He's in high school and he's just blowing it off 100% until they finally essentially are ready to kick him out. And they say, "Well, look, maybe you'll get a job. And so he was a bank teller for a while in a bank and trying to figure that out. And it wasn't going so great. He finds himself in the home of these parents through the Rotary Club. You couldn't make this up. They are bizarre. His dreams of being on the coast of Australia near Sydney are dashed when he arrives and finds out that he's actually well inland. He is so far from the coast. It is dry, hot desert. And frankly, the sponsor parents are batshit crazy. I mean, there's really no way to say it more. They are absolutely crazy, like something from like a movie. That there's a reason why they sponsor these exchange students to the Rotary. Of they're desperate to have more children in their home, and they're desperate to have children that will love them, that will give them a sense of identity. They have a special needs daughter that falls in love with Matthew, and he's essentially in a living hell in their house. And what he goes on to describe is just, he is stripped down. What he thought was this party year, what he thought was adventure, what he thought was just more of the same, crushing it, killing it with $45 in his back pocket and hot girls all day long, nothing could be further from the truth. He reaches a breaking point, and I won't give the whole story because it's totally worth the read, or even more, it's worth the listen. The audiobook of Green Lights is just phenomenal. But what happens over a year's time is that Matthew is broken down. You see, he had to get out. He had to leave. He had to go. He had to get time with the crazy Dooleys, which is the name of the couple. And so I want to read you what happened in his soul. In fact, the time at the Dooleys was torturous, a living mental hell, a true red light at the time. All my visions and grandeur were a mirage, but a handshake deal never gave me the option of returning home, so I endured it. And only later did I come to realize that suffering and loneliness that I experienced would be one of the most important sacrifices of my life. Before my trip to Australia, I was never an introspective man. On that trip, I was forced to look inside myself for the first time and to make sense of what was going on around me. The life I had left back home in Texas was summertime, year-round, most handsome, straight A's, dating the best-looking girl at my school and across town, a truck that was paid for, and I had no curfew. Australia, the land of sunny beaches, bikinis, and surfboards I never saw, gave me the ability to respect winter. I was on my own for a full year. I was in the bathtub every night before sundown, jacking off to Lord Byron and Rattle and Hum, telling myself daily, I'm okay, I'm good, you got this, McConaughey. It's just cultural differences. I became a vegetarian. I was down to 130 pounds, abstinent, planning to become a monk and free Nelson Mandela. Yeah, I was forced into winter, forced to look inside myself because I didn't have anyone else. I didn't have anything else. I'd lost my crutches. No mom, no dad, no friends, no girlfriend, no straight A's, no phone, no truck, no most handsome. And I had a curfew. It was a year that shaped who I am today. A year when I found myself because I was forced to. A year that also planted the seeds of a notion that continues to guide me. Here's the notion. Life is hard. Shit happens to us. We make shit happen. To me, it was inevitable that I was staying the entire year because I had shaken on it. I made an obligation. There was no going back. It was a crisis. I just didn't give the crisis credit. I treaded water until I crossed the finish line. I persisted. I upheld my father's integrity. And while I was going crazy, I kept telling myself that there was a lesson I was put there to learn, There was a silver lining in all of it, that all I needed was to go through hell to get to the other side, and I did. We cannot fully appreciate the light without the shadow. We have to be thrown off balance to find our footing. It's better to jump than fall, and here I am. Brothers, I want to share that story with Matthew as an introduction to one of the most fundamentally essential realities of masculine initiation that so often is sadly handled poorly by a mom and by a dad, and consequently, for better and for worse, can cause great harm. The boy must be released. The boy must go. He must launch. He must be stripped down to stand on his own feet and find that there is a foundation below his feet that is God, that there is an author beyond mom and dad, that there is an identity that's God bestowed, not parent bestowed. In many men's stories, this is where the entanglement with mother gets so complicated, because so few women become wholehearted and mature enough to fully release their sons. Of course, it makes sense. It is so deep in their DNA to be mother, that to find an existence, a daily purpose and experience apart from that intimate connection with a child can feel impossible. But out of the wholehearted, mature place of feminine love, one of the most heroic acts of this life-giving and this generative capacity to give life is to let go, is to, in many ways, let a relationship die and say, I have enough. I'm okay. I'm a mother with or without this bond. And therefore, I release you. I bless you to thrive. You know, I deal with so many men who are still married to their moms. It may not be overt, and it may not be conscious, but so many men go and marry a woman, but they haven't left mother. It might be an over-responsibility, a sense of over-responsibility for her because of how her story has played out. It may be her unwillingness to release the boy. It may be a sense where she needs the boy to validate her unmet emotional needs. Whatever the case, so often there's entanglement and enmeshment with mom, and it makes for a profoundly complicated marriage. And with dad, it takes different forms, but it's the same dilemma of dad is unwilling to release the son. Now, here's the deal, guys, that when a boy is young, he is meant to be in and even under his father's kingdom. All I have is yours. Come learn from me. Learn with me. Watch how I do it. Take a part of my kingdom. You have a place here that is good, that is healthy, that is beautiful. And yet, it's not a big enough story for the man in the boy. And that's the distinction. There comes a moment in time where the father has to release the son to find his way in a dangerous and brutal world. And friends, it's only been recent that I've seen this theme again and again in dozens of lives of men that I love, of men that I care about, of men that I fight for, that even in their father's benevolent, loving attempts, there has been a loss. There has been a failure. There has been a reluctance and, for whatever reason, an inability to let the son go. It takes many forms, and there are sadly many stories of fathers who put their sons to work in their kingdom because the father has an unmet need, and so he uses the son in one form or another to get his needs met, his financial needs, his relational needs, his emotional needs, his identity needs to feel like a man. But whatever the case, the father wields it over the son. There's other forms of this, and this is where it's nuanced, and you have to walk with God because there's no judgment at all, but there is curiosity, where I've seen the pattern of fathers that out of a benevolent intent to initiate their sons, the message is, come serve in my kingdom, and I will give you amazing opportunities. And here's sort of the catch is, your opportunities to grow, to lead, to prosper, to succeed will be better in my kingdom than anywhere else. And so you see the pattern that the son comes and works, quote unquote, for the father. And it may not be pragmatically in that specific of a role, but it may be where literally the son takes over the family business. And I'm not saying that can't be healthy. I'm not saying there isn't a redemptive path. But what I am saying is the vast majority of time, there's an inherent flaw. There's a missed opportunity. Because even in its benevolence, there is an unspoken message and a glass ceiling on the son's maturity and initiation. The unspoken message is, at the end of the day, I, the father, am in charge, and you, the son, are serving me. And there's an unspoken dilemma that so long as the son remains in the father's kingdom, he cannot fully find who he is. He cannot fully express who he is. He cannot fully fail in the ways he needs to fail to become the son, to return and be received afresh by the father. You cannot come home if you haven't left. And again, I don't want to be specific in saying something is right and something is wrong. I'm trying to illuminate spiritual realities of masculine initiation that can be very problematic. And I'll just point out one example. You know, I spent a lot of time with men with high net worth and family offices, with really good men that are second, third generation wealth, and they are trying to walk with God. They're trying to grow. They're trying to steward. And yet still, as grown men, they are still under dad. And no matter what unfolds, there is this dilemma. I am less than my potential. I am still not yet fully released. There's something in me frustrated. There's something in me harnessed that's actually not okay. And I see it in small businesses where the son steps in and takes over for the father and often even grows the business. And yet, I see the constant pattern of the dilemma. He has not established his identity apart from the father. I see it with financial advisors where so often it's the son that takes over the father's book of business, and he may be skilled and he may be benevolent and the father may have shown him the way, and yet there is still something missing where the son has not yet found his way fully and totally apart from the father. I share these stories with compassion because they're not prescriptive. These are metaphor and they're mythic. They're not specific. And so if you find yourself in any version of this, it's simply an invitation to curiosity, because this is a unique, this is a universal dilemma for every man. And so each of us, I'm guessing, can find problematic parts in our story. It may be that we were cast out too early and we actually never had the benevolent gift of actually thriving under our Father's kingdom, that we actually had to run our own kingdom when we were far too young. And therefore, we are reluctant to return to our Father's kingdom because we would never want to return to our biological Father's kingdom. Why in heaven's name would we return to our heavenly Father's kingdom? And so, friends, do you see the dilemma? I want you to recover this idea. How can you come home if you've never gone? And what do you do with the reluctancy, for whatever reason, of a father to bless the son to go? What do you do with the reluctance of the son, for whatever reason, to risk going? This is a universal dilemma and a universal curiosity, and this is deep waters in masculine initiation. And so before we go any further, I feel compelled to pause. I feel compelled to invite you to curiosity in the specifics of your story. How have you been invited by the father as the boy to be delighted in, to be celebrated, to be enjoyed, to be challenged and disciplined in love, to be provided for in a way where the father says, I have enough and I want to invite you in? And from that foundation or lack of, how have you contended with the idea of leaving your father's kingdom fully and totally? Not unlike Matthew's experience of going to Australia, of being stripped of title, of crutches, of entering what feels like an unlearning and an excavating, in order that you can recover your true identity, in order that you can know for yourself the very first time what God is really like, what the nature of his kingdom truly is, and to recover or discover your place in it. Friends, let's pause. These are deep waters. Let it sink in. What is the Father saying? What comes up for you? And I put it in these categories as I just listen to the Holy Spirit. Where is the fear? Where is the frustration? So if you just even had a list, here are my fears. Here are my frustrations. Here's my dilemma. And if I listened to my heart unencumbered, if I had nothing to fear, if I had nothing to prove, if I had nothing to hide, if I knew that my heavenly Father was generous, that was particular in my care, and that would stop at nothing to see that my story prevails, This is the risk I would love to take. This is the risk that would be next. Father, what are you saying? Friends, there's another place I want to go, but I feel compelled to wrap up this episode here and leave you with those questions, those curiosities. So let's stay here for 90 seconds. And for many of you, you'll need far more time. So find the time, make the space, ask the questions, and we'll come back together. But for all of us, let's take 90 seconds here, sink in, get curious. The one who knows you best is the one who loves you most. You're safe. You're okay. You're in good hands. Father, what are you saying? You have my attention. I choose to trust you one more time. Let's linger, friends, and let's listen.